Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you. Andrea Newell has worked for the District of Houston for 2 years. She took the role as Economic Development Officer 2 years ago when she saw that there was a need for stability coming out of the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. She said that she wanted to give back to her community now when building a diverse and innovative future for Houston is most needed. The news of the official closure of the Houston Canfor Mill was not exactly a shock, as Canfor had curtailed mill operations in the spring of 2023. But in September of this year, the official news was that Canfor would not rebuild in Houston, affecting over 300 jobs in the district. CICK News has been covering Canfor developments as they've occurred since April 2023, and the effect of a town's top employer closing down operations after 85 years have been what you might expect. Businesses close down, people move to where they can find work, and social services crumble without a local economy to support them. But the headline is, how can people afford to live in these villages and towns when they can't find housing that suits their needs or budget? The District of Houston initiated an update from the housing report from 2020 in partnership with City Spaces Consulting and funding from the Northern Healthy Communities Fund to evaluate their current needs and enhance housing options for improved living. That housing needs report has shown a need for affordable rental housing that is suitable for Houston's aging population as well as young professionals. Here's Andrea speaking about that report to CICK News this week.
My name is Andrea Newell, and I'm the Director of Economic and Community Development at the District of Houston.
I wonder if I could just start by asking what kind of the biggest impacts have been since the news from Canfor that there would not be a rebuild as we were all waiting during a curtailment phase.
Yeah, so there's definitely some economic ripple effects. So we've had seen some slowdown with retail. There's always challenges with retail at this time anyway. But yeah, we've seen definitely some slowdowns there. But I think that the biggest impact that I've seen so far, it wasn't necessarily the mill closure itself, because a lot of those people did retire or they moved on to different jobs, say mining. Where I saw the big impact is actually recently when they shut down logging, because the tenure is not being milled, right? And so they're not processing what's in the woods right now. So they're basically, our main contractors have been shut down working on the tenure that normally would go to Canfor.
It almost seems like everyone in Houston has a degree of separation from someone who works in logging or mill work or even like a contractor position. Can you give me the pulse of how people are feeling and what you're hearing from your position in the district?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of uncertainty, and uncertainty is not good for business, no matter what business you're in. I think people are just waiting to see what happens with the tenure more than anything, and also whether the government will require a mill to be rebuilt attached to that tenure.
Canfor blamed the closures on the challenge of accessing economically viable timber, as well as continuing financial losses and weak lumber markets, but said that the final blow was the big increase in U.S. tariffs. The dispute centers on the claim that the Canadian lumber industry is unfairly subsidized by the federal and provincial governments. Canadian lumber-producing provinces set stumpage fees for timber harvested from Crown land, while U.S. producers pay market rates. The U.S. increased its duties on Canadian softwood lumber from 8.05% to 14.54%, and this increase applies to both new exports and exports made in 2022. And the impact of that dispute has been described as a drag on efforts to improve the cost and supply of housing. Canada has argued that its stumpage fee system is not a subsidy and that the U.S. calculations of duties are inconsistent with federal law. Canada has also said that it is in the best interest of both countries to find a lasting resolution. However, communities such as Chetwynd and Prince George, Vanderhoof, and Fort St. John have all been affected by Canfor Mill closures, and Andrea says that it's important that these communities band together as a region. I do want to talk about a housing strategy that was presented in the council minutes last month. Can we talk about some of the ways that this plan has had to shift from 2020. Now, I know that you said that you started working in the district 2 years ago, so maybe you can only speak to how have they shifted since you've been at the district?
Yeah, I think really if you go back to 2020, they're similar still. I think what we're seeing in general is high prices for rental and housing stock that's aging. And I don't think that's necessarily different across the region. I think that's somewhat similar. But how that is tied into economic development and workforce attraction and all those things is really important. And I think that it really this strategy and the housing needs report really brings that to light on how that connection is really important to get investment and to drive resident attraction.
Before we were recording, you were speaking about a number of programs, and something that was mentioned in this housing needs report, this implementation plan, was a holistic approach, like what you're saying. So, can you tell me about what these other programs are?
Yeah, when the Canfor announcement came through, and I have to realize initially we thought it was going to be rebuilt, we did apply for a series of grants and we did receive them. One was through REDIP, so the FIT stream. And with that, we're putting together an economic diversification project. So that was given to Deloitte and they are completing that for us. It's in process right now, along with a destination marketing and development plan. So that has been given to, or it was the RFP was awarded to Partners in Haws. And so they're doing destination development strategy. They're also managing digital asset procurement. So we're looking at that tourism angle, but we're also looking at how we can diversify our economy better. It's not going to save us by any means, but it's one that can attract people to your community beyond the actual tourist itself. I think that's what's interesting about the housing needs report is it does go into some of the advantages of our housing too, which is the lower costs.
In the community feedback portion, the highest number of satisfaction about living in Houston was the outdoor, was the access to the outdoors, the beautiful views, scenery, trails. The lowest, however, was rental housing. Are there ways that this report is addressing reported landlord-tenant conflicts that have arisen between landlords? And again, this is not updating apartments or lack of other amenities such as laundry on site and things like that. So, is this report, how do you feel like this report is actually addressing those issues?
Yeah, so some things are enclosed right now, so I can't really discuss them publicly, but there is, we do have some changes to our standards of maintenance bylaws that will be coming out. It's been worked on with City Spaces, so that's part of the whole implementation. So once they did their first year, then they moved into the implementation phase, and that was one of the projects.
So, what is it that when you look at Houston and you look at the future, let's say 2 years from now, 5 years from now, what is it that you're hopeful about?
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to say that the community is highly resilient and there's a lot of skill sets in this community. What I'm most hopeful about is just the sheer number of opportunities that are available in Houston. So if you're willing to invest and you want to, say, create an interesting business downtown, there is an opportunity. We do have the space for that to occur. And I think with looking at what kind of resources we have. We have a great land base. We have cheaper land. Our housing prices are very reasonable if you want to own. We also have lots of water, lots of industrial land. So I think there's lots of power. There's lots of advantages. It's a matter of attracting the right investors to Houston.
What has Houston been able to learn, or what have some of the lessons that you've seen by places like Chetwynd or Prince George that local governments and municipalities take in order to keep families in towns like Houston? What are some of the lessons that they've implemented that Houston would like to also try or implement?
This is not the first time I've worked with the transition team. This is actually the second because this is the second mill closure in Houston. So we had our first mill closure in 2014 with Houston Forest Products, and we're still feeling the impacts of that 10 years later. And I honestly believe, speaking as a grandmother who would love her child and his spouse and grandchild to move back to Houston. I really do think it's about that diversification so that we're not dependent on the ups and downs of one particular industry. And so that message of opportunity and hope is really important to keep your citizens here, but also to maybe bring some back.
Research has shown that investments in supportive housing, which combines somewhere to live with coordinated services for residents with complex needs, save money across other budget lines, such as policing and social services. The newly updated Housing Needs Report legislation requires housing needs projections set to 20 years. These estimates are provided in the Housing Needs Report table. And within that time span, the District of Houston is projected to need a total of 217 units. Of that number, 58% of the dwellings will need to be one-bedroom units, 15% need to be two-bedroom, and 24% need to be three-bedrooms. So where does Andrea see the support? And how can the district make these projections now to implement changes that need to happen over 20 years? Do you feel like you're seeing government support for this, for diversification within towns the size of Houston?
Yes, because we did apply for the diversification project through the REDIP. So that was 100% funding through FIT. It was just shy of $500,000. Definitely, we have seen support from the provincial government. But I do think it's really important for all of us communities that are neighboring communities to work together. We do have similar situations, although a lot of them are unique to the particular community. But when we're advocating, which is really all we can do at those upper levels, it has a lot more power when you go in there together as a region instead of just a community. And I think the impacts of what's happening in forestry right now, there's no community that's immune to this on this corridor. And I just think that if we can cooperate and go in with a united message, it's going to go so much further. I haven't released the results yet of the destination marketing and development, but that's a really good example where communities can work together. Because when you're doing a draw, like you're trying to draw people into the region, it's a lot easier if you're doing it together than as a single entity.
Thanks again for tuning in to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at skeenastrong.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks again to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters. I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.